Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Oh,
I wonder
yeah.
If anybody actually, nah. If anybody watches that video.
I don't know. Nobody cares. It's the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, with my co-host, my brother, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. And we today are finally going to be talking about my favorite drugs in all the land, the glucagon-like peptide ones, GLP-1s. We're continuing our discussion on medicines used for weight loss. Our first lecture podcast, I keep saying lecture. Hopefully nobody sees these as lectures.
Kind of.
Hopefully not, though.
Not lecturing you.
No, we're not. It's a podcast. It's supposed to be more entertaining plus infotainment, whatever. Anyway, the first one was on indications. Like, hey, should you even consider this? Do you even qualify? Some, you know, standard contraindications, not to the specific drugs, but just overall. Then we went into Plenity, which is an FDA device, even though it's a pill. Like I said before, it doesn't make too much sense, but whatever. And then we talked about Orlistat, a fat inhibitor. And then last time we went into the more centrally acting drugs, which is really where you get more bang for the buck. Centrally acting, meaning in the brain, which is controlling appetite. And we talked about Qsymia or phentermine topiramate, and also Contrave or bupropion naltrexone. And this time we are talking about the newer generation of weight loss medicines. I'd say newer generation, although there's one of the medicines came out around when Qsymia and Contrave came out. But they're getting so powerful now, these more biological medicines called the GLP-1s or glucagon-like peptide 1s. And I think, you know, it would be really interesting. I hope we can get some of the GLP-1 researchers on here. Dr. Drucker, who is one of the pioneers in this. Friends with him on Twitter, you know, we're all social media friends, buddies, but it's really interesting to learn the story. But the gist of these medicines is that they've kind of revolutionized all of weight loss medicine, because they're just way more potent, seem to have probably cardiovascular benefit, although again, we're going to be there's some longer studies going on right now in people without type 2 diabetes, but in people with type 2 diabetes, my brother will bring that up probably, seem to have cardiovascular benefit. So these drugs are great. I love them. I just love them. And oh, by the way,
yeah,
we do not get absolutely. Paid just yet. We don't get paid just yet by Big Pharma. Yeah. Not yet, but I still love them. I still love these drugs. So why don't you discuss a little bit?
Well,
we
so,
can talk about how they work and all that different stuff too.
Yeah, so I mean, the history of these medications, of course, is rooted in type 2 diabetes. You know, we can talk about exenatide, which I had first experience with when I was a med student. So we're talking, you know, 2006-07 timeframe. You know, it was modeled after the Gila monster, and they realized the effects, the incretin effect of this type of hormone that comes from the L cells of our intestines. And, you know, without getting too in the nitty gritty, basically how these types of hormones and medications work is that they slow down gastric emptying, which when we talk about the medications, I tell patients that this is not maybe the exact reason, but I say you might get a little nausea with this. So, you know, a quarter to a third of people get nausea with these medications. But they also work, in the pancreas to improve glucose-dependent insulin secretion. So they increase insulin only as needed, which is really good for type 2 diabetes. They also work on the liver and block glucagon from essentially taking sugar out of the liver. And so these were, they initially revolutionized type 2 diabetes. And then, of course, the bariatric surgeons, you know, started, you know, while this was all going on all at the same time, and it was shown that, you know, like gastric bypass improved the levels of these hormones, and that was certainly part of how we were getting such great glycemic control after bariatric surgery, et cetera. But today, because we're talking about the weight loss, we'll talk about how, we'll talk about liraglutide first, because it's the one that's approved for weight loss. So some of the other ones before it that are approved for type 2 diabetes, we're not going to talk about today. We can talk about all those someday. But in addition to slowing gastric emptying, which helps, in addition to that incretin effect for glucose, it acts centrally, again, in that area of the arcuate nucleus, the POMC neurons, really to improve satiation. That's kind of its thing, feeling very satisfied or satiated after a meal, but overall, you know, reducing appetite and ultimately leading to reduced energy intake and weight loss. I actually like to, when I give the lecture on this to people, there was a trial that they compared liraglutide for weight loss to orlistat, which we talked about a couple episodes ago, that blocks fat digestion and absorption and has its own, you know, pretty good outcomes, despite, as you noted, people sometimes having the adverse effect of shitting themselves, which got me fired. But anyways, so this trial, this wasn't huge, but I do think it's important to compare these things. So it was over, you know, 564 people. They did not have diabetes, by the way. You know, what, over 20 weeks at first, there was like a little over 7% weight loss with the liraglutide compared with, you know, not quite 3% weight loss with placebo, you know, over 4% weight loss with orlistat. And at 1 year, liraglutide recipients essentially lost like 6 kilograms or 6% more than placebo and 3.8 kilograms or close to percent more than orlistat. And then they mixed them all. They let everyone get on liraglutide and they all caught up and had pretty good response, et cetera. But then the big trials for liraglutide were the scale obesity and prediabetes trials. On average, you know, getting about 6% weight loss more than placebo. And going back to that concept of that early response to therapy. So people who do respond to it by getting about 4% weight loss after about 16 weeks, those people go on to get about an 11% weight loss. Again, on average, some people do a lot better. Some people don't do as well. People with type 2 diabetes in all these trials that we talk about, I think I've mentioned before, they don't lose quite as much weight for what that's worth. But people who have prediabetes, you did really well. Like 80% of those people over 3 years were able to go back to basically 80% reduction in the progression to type 2 diabetes, and a lot of them were able to have normal glycemia. So this was the first one. And unknown caller. Oh dear, getting phone calls.
Oh jeez. My God, we're getting a call. Is a listener calling in already? We're not even live.
It's
right
a listener.
Now.
Hold on, let me see. Oh, let me see. This is this is Sarah from Lake Leelanau, Michigan. And she wants to ask about the cardiovascular risks and benefits of liraglutide with the trade name of Saxenda. Well, so it turns out that several years ago, I got to go to the ADA meeting where they presented the LEADER trial. And this was not Saxenda, the 3 milligram weight loss version of liraglutide, but this was the 1.8 milligram liraglutide in type 2 diabetes who had very high cardiovascular risk. A lot of them had established atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. And the great thing about this is that it showed very significant cardiovascular benefit. And so, you know, really we could take that thought and probably safely extrapolate it to liraglutide at a higher dose for those who have increased weight loss, increased risk of heart disease, and know that we have some pretty good benefits. So that's the story behind liraglutide at first.
At least safety. If we can't say benefit, at least we can probably assume it's safe. Yeah. I do want to mention real quick, my brother mentioned the incretin effect. I love this story because I just think the physiology is really interesting. I don't know if it's the 1940s or 50s. I don't want to bastardize the story. It doesn't really matter when it was, but it was a long time ago. 40s, 50s. They were doing studies on whether people drank glucose versus injected it straight into their veins. I don't know. I don't know if you're listening and you would assume the same thing, but I would assume that if you injected glucose, straight sugar, straight into your veins, you would have a quicker and faster and more of a pronounced peak and more insulin secretion doing that than ingesting it, drinking it. What they found was that, wow, for some reason, the people drinking the glucose had more of an insulin response than those who injected the glucose. And they called it the incretin effect, meaning the intestinal secretion of insulin. And then later on, they found there's multiple of these incretins, as they call them. One of them, GIP, which we'll discuss a little bit later, but GLP-1. Then I don't know if you know the, is it Gila Monster or Yila Monster? I don't know. I think I got corrected on that one.
I don't know.
Anyway, kind of interesting. There's a whole story. We should have Dr. Drucker. Dr. Drucker should really come on here and tell it, because I've read some of his articles on it. But basically what these engineers or researchers have done, they found it in the saliva of this lizard or lizard-like animal, the Gila Monster, whatever it is. But then eventually now they've restructured this molecule or peptide, I guess, really, so that our body doesn't break it down as readily, because we break down our own endogenous, our own production of GLP-1. And what they've done now is they've changed it to where we don't break it down as easily. And over the years, they've gotten better and better and better. And then also by modifying it, by putting a little amino acids and changing it slightly, they've changed it to where it hits these receptors in our brain differently. And that's why I think, as we're talking about liraglutide, which is kind of the second version, there is exenatide, which had to be injected twice a day and had a little bit of weight loss. Liraglutide only had to be injected once a day and had more weight loss, more pronounced effect on weight loss. And now we have these weekly injections, because they have more of like a week-long half-life, somewhere around there. And then they have an even more affinity to these receptors that help with weight loss and appetite. Again, definitions real quick. Satiation is when you stop a meal. Satiety is in between meals, like not feeling like you need to eat. I believe these work on all of that, and they increase that. So like you eat fewer calories with a meal, you don't have to eat as much. And then in between, you don't have to eat. You don't feel like you need to eat as frequently, or you don't have to, you can go longer without eating as much. Super powerful stuff. Okay. So, that was just a quick little aside. So my brother just talked about liraglutide. Are you moving on to the next? This was 3 milligrams. It was approved 2014, by the way.
The daily one.
8 years ago.
Yeah, I think we'll move on to semaglutide now, because you mentioned the weekly versions and how they're even better. They modified them to last longer. And then we'll go back, we'll circle back how they're taken, the side effects and all that stuff, I think. So now let's talk about semaglutide, which is, I tell people, it's like liraglutide's younger, cooler brother, like you, right? That's what we used to tell people about you, and now you try to prove it to people, and you're taller.
I suppose.
Not quite as buff, but whatever. That's not quite as ripped. Okay, so
a few other benefits. I have a few other like advantages.
Oh my god!
Hong Kong. All right, keep going.
Good. I just got fired again. Okay. All right. So semaglutide. That's the weekly, essentially, kind of the weekly younger brother of liraglutide. It was approved a few years ago by the trade name of Ozempic for type 2 diabetes. And it was essentially shown that it had even better glycemic benefits and weight loss for people with obesity and type 2 diabetes. So now let's go back to a phase 2 trial several years ago. This was published in The Lancet in 2018, trying to figure out, well, what dose of this would be right for weight loss specifically. So this was a short phase 2 trial, people about 50 years old, weighed about 112 kilograms, and they randomized people actually to daily doses of semaglutide. So it wasn't weekly yet, even though the weekly dose was approved for type 2 diabetes. And so it was 6-1, but they also compared it to daily liraglutide. And I wish I could, you know, show people this slide, because it's really cool. So basically, it was like semaglutide 0.05 milligrams a day, and then 0.1 milligrams, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4, and then they compared it to liraglutide 3 milligrams or placebo. Well, placebo got the usual weight loss dose over 52 weeks of about 2% weight loss. So that's pretty typical of placebo arms. liraglutide, daily liraglutide, got 8 to 9%, depending on if you were, you know, a completer of the analysis, etc. So, you know, 6 to 7% more than placebo. Again, pretty typical of the liraglutide trials, and pretty darn good, by the way, right? Well, mm-hmm. So then these single daily doses of semaglutide from the baby dose, which got 6 to 7% weight loss, then the next dose was already like competing with daily liraglutide. So 0.1 milligrams of semaglutide a day was getting 9 to almost 10% weight loss. And then all the other doses just started smoking it with 12, 13 to 15. And then the highest dose getting 17 to 18% weight loss. So suddenly you're like, whoa, this is dramatic.
How high did they get in there?
0.4 milligrams, 0.4 per day. So
2.8.
They decided... Well, yeah. So if you go now to what is approved. So then they did the trials on weekly semaglutide, titrated slowly up to what is approved now at 2.4 milligrams. It's a subcutaneous little shot again, weekly. And they have all sorts of trials going on. Several of them already published, and you know, we can talk a little bit about them, but they have, you know, kind of the basic population excluding type 2 diabetes. They have a trial in type 2 diabetes that they actually compared to the old dose of diabetes version of semaglutide or Ozempic of 1 milligram. They have, I think, a very interesting trial, and there are plenty of these where they compare to placebo in very intensive lifestyle therapy. And I do think we should talk about that. And then they talk about, you know, a weight loss maintenance study. So, you know, if we talk about the once weekly in adults with overweight or obesity, the bottom line is, one, I think very important, is that 94% of the patients completed the trial. That's better than other weight loss medication trials, despite having some increased nausea that we'll talk about. And the essential placebo-subtracted weight loss on average, again, not just those who responded, because to be honest, most people responded. And this is why you're a shill for them, even though you don't get paid yet. 14% more than placebo. Oh, yeah. That is phenomenal. So remember, we talk about this 10%, 15%, so clinically important categorical weight loss for people. And then when they actually look at that categorical weight loss, 75% of people, compared to only like 12 in the placebo, were getting more than 10%. Over 50% got 15% weight loss. And remarkably, and we'll talk about the next thing in a little bit, but over a third of people got 20% weight loss, which is like bariatric surgery, and just dramatic improvements for those who have prediabetes. Almost all of them reverted to normal glycemia. There's just a trial published on that if you want to look for that. So preventing diabetes, et cetera. It's just remarkable. When they studied it in type 2 diabetes, of course, the weight loss isn't quite as much, but the 1 milligram Ozempic for type 2 diabetes, which is now actually approved at 2 milligrams, which is helpful for us in other ways, got 4.5% more weight loss than placebo. Again, not as type 2 diabetes, harder to lose weight, right? But the 2.4 milligram semaglutide got another 3% more weight loss than the 1 milligram. The sugar improvement wasn't a lot better, a little bit better in the higher dose. Wegovy is the trade name for the higher dose semaglutide, but it was with using fewer other medications for diabetes. So that's nice because you get to reduce the medications. Do you want me to talk about the high intensity lifestyle trial? Because I just think that's fascinating, to be honest.
Yeah, you might as well. What is that? Step 3 or step 4? I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember. There's a bunch of steps. They call them step 1, 2, 3 through whatever they call them.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So one of the earlier trials, and we didn't talk about it in our last podcast because we just kind of went across the board, but with the Contrave, the bupropion naltrexone, they studied it against placebo, but both arms got true intensive lifestyle therapy, which we always want people to do. And, you know, you heard me say it's typical for weight loss trials. This kind of wimpy 2% weight loss, because it's like, diet and exercise recommendations. Well, true intensive lifestyle therapy usually gets 6, 7, 8% weight loss. So I think in that naltrexone bupropion placebo arm, there was like 7% weight loss, which is pretty darn good intensive lifestyle therapy. But the medication arm got another, you know, 4% or so more weight loss. So, and that was also shown in a liraglutide trial, by the way. A very similar thing. So now we're talking about the step 3 semaglutide weekly Wegovy. It was about 600 patients, 500 of them being women. And 400 got semaglutide, 200 got placebo. And so the placebo arm in this intensive lifestyle therapy arm got almost 6% weight loss, almost 50% of them losing 5% of their baseline weight. Pretty darn good, right? Well, the semaglutide arm got 16% weight loss and almost 90% of them lost 5% more of their baseline weight. So that's pretty darn good. What I think is fascinating, I think a lot of us think are fascinating, especially those of us who are like lifestyle shills, that 16%, think about it compared to that first trial I talked about. The absolute weight loss in that first trial was like 16% weight loss. So it was almost like we weren't getting a lot more on top of lifestyle therapy in this step three,
additive.
Which in some ways, disappointing to those of us who are lifestyle shills, but also maybe what it tells us is it just really helps people do really, really, really well with their diet, I think.
Yes. That's what I tell patients. I go, look, because they're like, how many calories should I track? I'm like, forget about the calories to track it. This medicine, I'm going to sound like such a shill. This medicine helps you do
what you are shill.
It's going to basically, I hate to say this, but normalize your physiology. It will make you feel as if you think, oh, wow, I feel like I think I should. That's what they always say. I feel like I ate what I thought I should be eating, as opposed to extra servings, wanting more, whatever types of dessert or whatever after a meal, whatever extra helpings, anything like that. It's like, wow, I ate a small meal and I felt satiated, and then I had satiety afterwards. I was good. They all say the same thing, and they all say it makes them feel like it just helps them do it easier. And I don't say it's not a magic bullet, although I suppose it could be considered
it's
that.
It's getting there, unfortunately. But
I know. It's like, oh man, if it helps people to eat fewer calories, it'll work. But I tell people just focus on dietary patterns. It will let your satiety and let the drug be the guide, and you don't even have to focus on calories. In fact, don't, please actually don't. Cause then you're going to be like, I don't think I'm eating enough. It's cause we're not good at tracking calories. People are like, I'm eating 500 calories. Like, no, you're not. You're still eating plenty of calories. I promise you. Although there are some people, it works so well that some people just don't eat. Cause in the beginning they can be very nauseated. Hey, one question real quick.
Lixizenatide.
Yeah. So that's,
Lixie listens to this, then that's a GLP. It's only approved in the U.S. In combination with glargine, but yeah.
It's once a week, right? Is that once a week one?
No, it's actually once a day. It's because it's combined.
These other ones anymore. I don't use them anymore, but there's one that's once a week that just doesn't really help with weight loss that much.
That was albaglutide, or Tansium was the trade name for it. Of interest, and we can talk about this with type 2 diabetes, but it was just kind of a wimpy GLP for weight loss, and it was kind of wimpy for glucose control, but amazingly, it did have a really good cardiovascular outcome trial. So that's reassuring for the class, but it's not on the market anymore.
So yeah, so my point in discussing this is that we talked about it's not just about the half-life. There's also something about how the affinity to the receptors and they may hit different receptors stronger and may hit certain receptors less if they have side effect profiles. Anyway, it's just interesting. So semaglutide, strong, works extremely well. That other one that my brother just mentioned, I can't even remember these ones, but not strong, off the market. sorry, Big Pharma. Whoever made that one, I can't remember.
Sorry, Tansium. Yeah. So, all right. Well, one other important point, I think, is that, you know, we've talked a lot about how the biology works against people, and it drives not only holding on to the weight, obesity protects obesity, but it drives weight regain, right? And so, generally speaking, anytime people stop these medications, we see the weight regain occur. So step four was a cool trial. There was a really cool maintenance trial with liraglutide too, but you know, to be honest, semaglutide kind of makes liraglutide obsolete, other than the supply chain issue right now. But so step four trial. So these were people who were struggling with obesity, and they all got a 20-week run-in of semaglutide treatment. Okay. And so then they either switched to placebo or continued semaglutide over the following 48 weeks. Okay, so this wasn't a huge trial. Again, 800 people or so. And what you saw over 20 weeks was that there was a pretty good, about 10.5% weight loss for everyone. And then they were randomized to be either switched to placebo or continue semaglutide. And unfortunately, if you look at the graph, if you look at this trial, it was published in JAMA last year, March of 2021, you start to see the placebo arm start to regain their weight, unfortunately. But the people who continued semaglutide continued to lose weight and ultimately had another 8% more weight loss. And again, going back to that categorical weight loss that I sound like I'm probably obsessed with because I think it's so important, 80% of people in the semaglutide arm got 10% weight loss. Over 60%, almost two-thirds, got over 15% weight loss, and 40% got 20% weight loss. And, you know, like I said, that early responsive therapy we talk about with all the other meds, almost everyone's getting early responsive therapy with semaglutide. 88% got 5% weight loss in that 20-week run-in. So people are responding to this pretty darn well. And you know, and we have to talk about some of the potential safety concerns and adverse effects and dosing and stuff. But what do you think about that?
Yeah. So, okay. So let me just shield for my company this sequence, this joinsequence.com. You can, whatever. It's where I practice my telemedicine. And again, I don't do the Q-simia-fentramine. I would if legally I could. But so I do go towards these GLP-1 medicines, mostly semaglutide if I can, although we're going to talk about the newest one out that I love shilling out actually even more, which I didn't think was possible, but whatever. So I do use off-label Ozempic, which is semaglutide that goes up to 2 milligrams now that was just approved. But that's this Ozempic is only approved for type 2 diabetes, but we call it off-label, meaning these people don't have type 2 diabetes, but their insurances give them the medicine anyway without having type 2 diabetes. And I will say, I look at the graph. We have these little cool graphs in the corner for me to know whether they're having a response or not. And I don't know. I think I'm closing in. I'm in between 500 to 1,000 patients now. And I have a good handful on Contrave that couldn't get this medicine, semaglutide, because insurance wouldn't approve it. And, you know, there's once in a while, these people on the Contrave, the bupropion naltrexone we talked about last time, there's like one person out of like whatever it is, 40 that I have on it, that got like a 10 or more percent. Most people are sitting around that 4 or 5% weight loss, whereas semaglutide, however I have like 500 people on it, I only have one or two patients out of that haven't hit over like 6%, I believe. I think every single one of them has hit at least 5%, but it's actually rare to see only around 5% with it. It happened. I've had a couple, but most people, it's really cool to see, as my brother said, that average 15% weight loss. Most people, I see the graph over a few months, like whatever it is, 4 or 5 months that they've been on it, maybe 6 months for some. They hit, it's right in between 15 to 20%. Some of them are over 20%, but most of them are still going. So I don't know. I assume a bunch will still hit that. As my brother said, what is that? A third of people got 20%. I assume we're going to see that occur.
40%,
and, you know, and these people, they all say the same thing. I've struggled with diet and exercise. I've done keto in the past. I've counted calories in the past. I've lost 30 to 50 pounds in the past multiple times. I've always regained it. And this is the first time I actually feel like I'm not, I always say white knuckling it. Like you have to be almost like, you have to fight really hard against your body's appetite drivers and the environment. But what are you going to do about the environment? We can send you to an island where you have to pick your own fruit and fish and stuff. So you have no choice. But if you're surrounded by these foods, as we've talked about before, I don't call it a choice. It's so subconscious. Whereas this medicine, it's not only just satiation. It works in those reward centers that we talked about with bupropion and naltrexone. It works up in that mesolimbic pathway, the reward center. And I don't know. I haven't taken the medicine. They all say the same kind of thing. Like, oh my God, I just don't even feel like having it, and I'm okay with it, as opposed to being like, oh, I wish I could have that. It's like, no, I just, it shuts it off. It shuts off the signal.
Yeah.
Powerful
what's
stuff.
What's dad's favorite? I'm just a wee bit past Harry Hachibu.
Yeah. Harry Hachibu. Yeah. So like, I get that. We both get that way. I'm like walking around cause I stuff myself. I'm like, oh God, that felt so good. And this medicine doesn't,
you gotta tell people what that means though.
Hirahachibu is a Japanese term. It's 80% full. Eating till you're 80% full. And unfortunately for us, we like to eat till we're 100% full and maybe 110% full, because hey, it just tastes good. Yeah, I got some shawarma and some French fries, whatever. Yeah. Man, I love it.
Jeez. We're lucky that we have always, one, we have good genetics behind us. So yes, we do. We understand this stuff, and we've been very physically active our whole lives, and we have been very focused on the quality of our diet our whole lives. So we can get away with some of that a little bit. If dad's listening to this, he's not getting away with going a little wee past Harry Hachibu lately. So anyways, all right. Sorry, dad.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But, All right. So it's hard, right? The biology is hard. So in addition to weight loss, though, what we actually care about are the cardiometabolic and the actual outcomes. So in addition to weight, waist circumference, you know, where we store the weight, waist circumference improves. Obviously, the glycemia, the blood sugars improve. Blood lipids, our cholesterol patterns improve. Blood pressure improves. And very important for people, physical function improves. And I don't know if we have a trial in semaglutide yet, but, you know, liraglutide had a trial that showed improved sleep apnea. And actually, overall, between medication and placebo, this is amazing, to be honest, but the placebo, of course, was a shot, right? So some of the side effects are like, when you get the shot, the little weekly subcutaneous shot,
injection site reaction rates.
Yeah. But the overall adverse effect rates were very similar. But we talk about adverse events leading to discontinuation of the drug. And I mentioned that I think it's amazing that so many people continued through the trial of this, because there is a nausea, right? There are gastrointestinal side effects that can make it a little bit difficult. But only 7% of people in the first major trial discontinued it, and 3% discontinued in the placebo arm. They weren't even getting any medicine. Almost like 44% of people got some nausea. It usually goes away if you can weather the storm, if you can just kind of deal with it, do the best you can. We have found out, I think some studies and anecdotally, we know that try to avoid high fat, especially greasy foods that you're trying to avoid anyways, and that might help you tolerate it a little bit better. And we can personalize this. We've had this discussion all the time. You don't have to go up on the dose every week like is indicated or like the trials were done. You start with a baby dose weekly for 4 weeks. Then you go to the next dose, 0.5 milligrams for 4 weeks, and then a milligram. And then 1.7 milligrams. And ultimately, it's 2.4 milligrams weekly. But nobody's forcing people to do that. So we got to personalize therapy and help them tolerate it. Because if you respond to it, you respond to it. And it doesn't have to be the full dose, to be honest. I mean, that's a little getting off label stuff. But other safety concerns. So historically, the class of GLP-1 receptor agonists, there's been some concern of something called pancreatitis, which is a really big deal because these really help the pancreas work better. And in layman's terms, it kind of beefs them up a little bit. But when you have obesity and type 2 diabetes specifically, you're at increased risk of pancreatitis. You're also at increased risk of gallstones, which cause pancreatitis. And so there's a lot of confounding there. But I'll tell you, in all the meta-analyses of GLP-1 receptor agonists, there's not a concern of pancreatitis. And in the semaglutide 2.4 Wegovy trials, it was essentially nominal. Three patients in the step one got pancreatitis. None in the placebo arm, but it's such a small little number. One of them actually had a history of acute pancreatitis, and the other two had gallstones. So all recovered during the trial period, and the other trials didn't really have any. So step two had two versus one in placebo, none in step three and four. So I'm really not that concerned about it. It's something to be aware of. Don't give it to someone with pancreatitis, or don't, if you have pancreatitis, chronic pancreatitis, probably aren't going to take it. So
what about history of pancreatitis, known pancreatitis due to gallstones? If you know they've got it from gallstones, do you give it? The answer is supposed to be supposed to be able to give it. I don't. I'm a little nervous with that, but.
Yeah, I mean, so part of it is you got to treat the underlying root cause, right? That's what the quacks always say, that real doctors don't treat the root cause, when in reality we do. That's like the whole training of medicine, is you treat the diagnose and treat the underlying cause. So if there's some other cause of pancreatitis, you need to take care of it. If it's gallstones, you take care of it. There was a meta-analysis recently that did suggest with GLP-1 receptor agonist that there is a little bit more risk of the biliary disease, which is the gallbladder situation. The numbers weren't very big, but it was, you know, statistically significant, something to think about. But we, you know, I personally get consulted a lot for triglyceride-induced pancreatitis. Well, if we can improve that with appropriate diet medications, then adding something like semaglutide, Wegovy, for weight loss is going to help them stick to the diet that prevents high triglycerides that cause their pancreatitis. So, you know, there's some reasons where it actually, I would argue, is even more indicated or so. So, by the way, going back to the other thing we talked about, the leader trial. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the gallbladder thing. Damn internet. If you lose a lot of weight quickly, you're at an increased risk for, gallstones. So is it something GLP-1 actually increasing gallstone formation, or is it that these people are just it's hard to disentangle that. I don't know how they, like, I don't know if they can do that, but you'd have to give it to see if they can lose weight in different ways. But we see this with bariatric surgery and all sorts of stuff. People lose a lot of weight quickly, they form gallstones. So again, I'm a shill for this medicine. So I think that it's probably more related to the weight loss, but if I'm going to be scientific about it, it's possible there is an effect from GLP-1, but I would say it's probably related to weight loss. What about, black box warning, medullary thyroid cancer. I think we got to address that one, because that's the one that freaks people out.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, medullary thyroid cancer. So, you know, I see these once in a while, because of what I do as an endocrinologist, but it's very different and much more rare than classic papillary thyroid cancer, which is relatively common to some degree. Jeez, another caller.
Oh, dear Lord.
and so if you have a family history of something called medullary thyroid cancer, or MEN2, which is a syndrome, then you should avoid it. And this has to do with animal trials and perhaps some increased risk. You will know if this is in the history. I mean, I, as an endocrinologist and an obesity specialist, I know absolutely for sure if someone has a history of medullary thyroid cancer, and we're not going to do it. So so just be aware of that. You know, talk to your doctor about it, I think, is important. I do think we need to touch on the cardiovascular risk. Are you going to say something about that?
We will, but the pharmacists will say, do you have thyroid cancer? Not to diss any pharmacists, but like, do you have a history of thyroid cancer? And like, yes. And like, oh my God, you shouldn't take this. It's very specific. Medullary thyroid cancer, extremely rare, as my brother said. I've never seen it in any patient, because I see the general population. These types of people get sent to my brother, so it's kind of this selection bias. The reason they had to put this black box warning in is because they saw an increased incidence of this thyroid cancer in rats, but they have different cells in their thyroid that predispose them to medullary thyroid cancer, and the GLP-1s hit it. Humans don't have these cells, there hasn't been a signal in the randomized controlled trials to suggest there is an increased risk, although, you know, these trials aren't super long. But I think it's similar to the pancreatitis. There's not a signal. They had to put it in there because of the rats, and there's a lot of people out there who are much more into the research than we are, that are kind of pushing that, hey, the FDA should be taking that black box warning down, because like, this is only scaring people from taking this medicine, and it's not a real signal in humans. Yeah. So anyway, just an aside, go into the cardiovascular stuff.
Yeah. So going back to, we talked about liraglutide, and this was very reassuring for the higher dose liraglutide, to think that maybe there's even some cardiovascular benefits. So liraglutide, the lower dose for type 2 diabetes, was studied in the LEADER trial, published in New England Journal of Medicine, 2016. I can't believe it. I was at this trial. It was like a bunch of nerds getting swept into the big arena. It was like it was amazing. I got pulled in. It was great. Basically, overall, reduced cardiovascular mortality, non-fatal heart attacks, and non-fatal strokes, statistically significant. So this is great. And the number needed to treat was pretty low, to reduce the risk of that was only 39 in patients who had a history of MI and stroke, a little bit higher, 44 if they had a history of established atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease without stroke. Number needed to treat to prevent cardiovascular death was 82 and 63 respectively in those groups. So that, you know, we're talking about reducing cardiovascular death with these medications. Semaglutide had a cardiovascular outcome trial, a little bit smaller. It did have statistically significant reduction in that overall primary outcome of all those things together. It did not meet statistical significance for reducing heart attacks, but it certainly had a very nice trend. It probably wasn't powered for it. It did significantly reduce statistically non-fatal strokes, which is nice. It did not meet statistical significance much at all for cardiovascular death, but still pretty darn reassuring. And there are ongoing trials with the higher doses of these medications. So certainly, again, if we're losing a lot of weight, getting improved cardiovascular surrogate markers, then we should be seeing some good benefits. So that's nice to see.
Yeah, there's the ongoing trial, the SELECT trial is going. Yeah. We should see the signal. Or we should see something in the next few years. What about, okay, so just talking about response, I have some people on 1 milligram of semaglutide who reached that 15%, and we don't even go up because they're just like, I'm good with this. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, again, there's other people I have 2.4 who have only hit the around 10%. So it's interesting. I think it's important to know, mm-hmm. because we don't want to get side effects, that when you make these big jumps, some people get the nausea. So I think it's important to know that. Real quick, let's talk about the newest one, tirzepatide. Mounjaro it's approved for type 2 diabetes. Likely in a year, it will be approved for obesity. Do we have time to talk about that right now, or do you want to save that one? I don't care.
I think we should save it for its own right, because I think we should talk about it by itself for type 2 diabetes, because that's what it's actually available for. And then we can throw in, because we're so excited about it, for obesity, and we're really treating the obesity that drives type 2 diabetes. So I think we should do that one on its own right, because people are going to be excited. Okay. About it. We can give a little bit more detail.
That's
to
totally
it.
Fine. Very, very powerful stuff. So lastly, dulaglutide or Trulicity is one, real quick. That one, there is some weight loss, but it's not as good as semaglutide. It's a weekly injection, and it's going to get replaced by that Mounjaro or tirzepatide. Right now, real quick, unfortunately, Novo Nordisk, the manufacturer of Wegovy, messed up the manufacturing process of the pen. So a lot of people are like, hey, I can't even get this stuff. So you have to get it in the form of Ozempic, which isn't approved for type 2, or which is only approved for type 2 diabetes. So actually, real quick, right now, what I'm doing is I'm putting everybody on Saxenda with the hope that once the Wegovy comes back into stock, we'll switch them to that, because insurance would likely approve the Wegovy if they approve Saxenda, so, which is the liraglutide high dose.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's about it for now. Constipation is a common side effect. Not super common, but that's where we talked about adding the orlistat. No studies done on that.
Yeah, I was going to say we did.
I get people walking, drinking plenty of water, lots of fiber. Sometimes I add in Miralax. Nausea, you just really got to take the dose down. Sometimes I add in Zofran to help them out. If there's diarrhea, if you can bulk up their stools a little bit and pull back on the dosing a little bit. Sometimes I see fatigue. That one's a more rare one. I thought it was from eating fewer calories, but I sometimes see it. So anyway, powerful drugs. I hope you guys got something. Hope y'all had something you learned in this podcast. And if you want to get it from me, joinsequence.com. If you want to get it from my brother, you got to fly to go see him, or just talk. Obviously, if you don't want to do it, you can talk to your primary care, whoever else. But I'll shield for my own company. So anyway, here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.